power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, one. Deadline.
It is episode 33.
Wow, we're close.
One more. Before the very special 34. Well, anyway, let's not talk about it.
We can't talk about it right now.
It's episode 33 of Diplomacy Cast, a podcast about the board game Diplomacy, and my name's Eric Mead.
And I'm still Nathan Barnes.
He continues to be Nathan Barnes. It is New Year's Day as we record. Who knows when this will get out to you by, but it's New Year's Day today. We are enjoying some Bloody Marys and some recovering from some hangovers doing some recording.
Yeah, you know, it's what you do.
Today's show. Wow, what are we going to do? We're going to do Hot Off the Press.
We got some
email.
Yep. Still hate that name.
I
don't like it.
We got, like, the cool little intro for it now.
Oh, that's true. Hot off the presses!
Yeah. We're going to do power plays. We're basically just going to burn through the little cool intros thing. We're going to talk to you. We're going to go back to the well of talking about some common alliances, and we're going to go AI today.
Yeah.
Off the board.
And we're going to do a little update on fantasy diplomacy.
We have a winner to crown.
Yep.
And
the first winner.
Maybe we should just leave it at that.
Yeah, and then we're going to have the winner. The winner is going to come on the show. So
the winner will be joining us at the end of this episode, but we're not going to say who.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
So
stay tuned.
Hot off the press. Yeah, people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot.
If we just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that.
Drop it like it's hot.
Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
Go.
Hot off the press.
Email
stuff.
Yeah. We got some great emails this time.
Yeah, we did. Thanks for stepping it up, listeners. Yeah.
Oh, and word to the wise, just if you send us an email and you don't hear from us immediately, it's not that we're ignoring you, it's that we don't always respond to the emails very quickly.
That's true. Yeah. Or it's that we're ignoring you.
Yeah. Probably we're not ignoring you.
Probably
we're not. So just, you know, have no fear. We do get them.
This one comes from Robert. Eric and Nathan, I discovered Diplomacy Cast a few weeks ago, and I just finished listening through the entire backlog of episodes.
Wow.
Nicely done. All right. I guess we gotta get cranking on some new ones.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan, and I think you guys do a great job. I particularly enjoyed the April Fool's episodes.
That is one of the first times we've heard that, so...
Yeah.
Really.
But my new favorite insult to use against players who are too care-bearish is to accuse them of just wanting to settle for a 7-way draw on an ethanol-fueled bus. I had to rack my brain on this one, and I remembered that it was the fake letter that Andy Marshall wrote us in the first...
April Fool's
episode.
That was a good one.
Really good. Really.
I forgot about that.
An ethanol fueled bus is really good, but we can't take credit for that.
That's all Andy.
Not that Andy. He's listening, so we can just take credit for that, I guess. I've been playing Diplomacy off and on for about 3 or 4 years now, exclusively online. I'm sure this will make Eric groan, but I wanted to bring up the idea of him again playing an online game.
We need a cough.
Excuse me. Yeah. I got nothing. Ever since the idea was first floated, I've wanted to see it happen. I would love to facilitate this, and I will even go so far as to create an account for him on Web Diplomacy and join a game for him. Let me know if you are okay with this, and I'll register an account.
Yeah, wow, look at you groan, as predicted. That's nice.
I was so into it, for
2 years ago?
2 years ago, and then it never got off the ground because we didn't really... Well, it just never got off the ground, and now... Now I feel busier, and so what should I say? What do you think?
I don't know. It's completely your choice. I don't have time for it, and I didn't have time 2 years ago either.
Well, no, I know you don't have time. You have good reasons. It's me or nobody. Robert, email us again about this in about 3 weeks. I am actually going to a diplomacy tournament in about 2 weeks. Definitely not going to contemplate it until then, but after I come back and will presumably be raring to go to record another show, that would be another time where I could sort of see the rest of my life before me and see if I feel like I have a chance to make that work.
So that's a firm maybe.
That's a firm maybe, and of course we will cover it on the show if we do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway. Let's see. If you guys, and then he goes on. He's got all kinds of stuff in this email. If you guys have some time to field some questions, I have a few that I thought of while listening. I really like this first one. How do you react when you play with a group of players who are preparing for a draw from the very beginning and not even trying to win? My personal feeling is that they're not playing in the spirit of the game. This happened to me recently while playing a 10-player variant where five of the players agreed at the very beginning of the game that they would work to eliminate the other five players and then immediately declare a five-way draw.
Okay.
I was on the receiving end of this and honestly wouldn't have had a problem being ganged up on if the five remaining players were willing to fight it out afterwards.
Sure.
Okay.
Great. It's a surprise. This comes up a lot.
Yes.
Specifically, it was the line where you say, Robert, this is not in the spirit of the game. I hear that a lot. I hear a lot of people talk about situations that happen to them on the board and their opinion on it sort of being summed up with, I don't like it. It doesn't seem to me like it's in the spirit of the game. The most frequently when people sort of... some people call it auto drawing. Some people call it, things like that. Pre-arranged alliances. People that know each other off the board I hear about it most when people are friends off the board and then they ally in the game. And there's this thought that, oh, you're not playing the spirit of the game. And in one sense, yes, it's not really in the spirit of the game. On the other sense, if you listen to the rest of our episodes, you'll hear it kind of a theme running through them. Like, you got to play the board. You got to play the people. You can't fix it by telling someone, this is not in the spirit of the game. You can't do that. This is never going to happen.
Right.
And it's never – there's no way to enforce it. And to that end, it's sort of – you just have to accept it. Yeah, it might not be in the spirit of the game, but it's something you need to identify quickly and then work towards and compensate for.
I agree with all of what you just said, but I can also say that if the story is exactly as Robert is telling it to us, I'm not sure I've ever been in that exact situation where, for whatever reason, some subset of the players just before the game even starts decide that this is their desired result and then work for it. And that I really don't understand. Like why is that fun? For anybody. I feel like if I were in honestly that situation where it wasn't just like I was interpreting it that way or like I feel like I was being ganged up on or whatever, like I feel like I would, my solution to that if I were really in a situation where everybody just for some reason was like, let's have a five-way draw, that'll be really super fun, would be to just try and talk somebody out of it. Like I just have my fun by trying to talk somebody out off of that. Because what's really going on, I mean, if that is what's really going on, like, that, why is that even... At that point, I'm just like, well, all right, this game's stupid then. I may as well do something fun and see if I can just, like, blow it up. And if I get killed by a five-way alliance that's just made up their minds in advance to do that, fine. But, I've honestly never been there. And I mean, like, I would probably just mercilessly mock everybody who was in the auto five-way draw if I actually were in that to see if I could, like, shame anybody into stabbing just to make the game fun. And if I failed at that, then, what a five bunch of nerds if that's really what's fun for them, right?
Well, this, I mean, like, let's take this in context.
Yes.
It's a 10-player variant online.
Okay, so let's say it was four in a regular game or something.
Yeah, I just don't think it's something that's going to happen in a normal in-person game.
Right, no, it wouldn't. Now, having said that, to get back to what you were saying, though, like, a lot more often, you'll think that's happening. Or you'll feel happening in a game.
Yeah, I was going to go this way.
And especially, like, certain scoring systems that reward that. Like, I can remember, like, a couple early tournaments that I went to feeling like... somebody would always bring up, okay, so who's the three-way draw here? Like, when you're making plans, in the early to mid-game, so they'll be like, so it's you, me, and Nathan, right? And I'll say, oh, okay. But what you have to realize when that's what's happening is that they're off saying, so it's you, me, and Dave, right? So it's you, me, and Robert, right? So, you know, it's the people float these things all along, and they did. Some people, depending on the scoring system, like to get started really early at floating these, hey, let's just ally until the end of the game in some kind of like a three-way thing or something like that, especially if the scoring system is like one of those ones where like a three-way is your standard good result in a game. There's a lot of, but if you really think that anybody has just made up their minds on exactly one three-way pairing from before Spring 1901, even if that's what it feels like, that's not what's happening.
Usually. There's the extremely rare circumstances in which there are people that are friends, or they like just like working with each other. I've definitely run into it. But it's rare in the extreme, and I think... And I think in your case, in Robert's case,
yeah.
This is a phenomenon, like I said earlier, that online, and there's probably five people that play together, or they're younger, or whatever,
right.
which is why online play is supposed to be anonymous, and you're not...
Well, right.
I mean, that's the whole thing that it's trying to wrap.
It's not, it just strikes me as like such a like loser thing to do.
Well, it's sort of like, why bother playing?
Right,
like,
exactly.
Oh, look, we had a plan and executed it, and it worked because it was overwhelmingly stacked in our favor.
Right.
It's like winning at any game. It's not fun if you cheat.
Right, exactly.
But I think that's why we're talking about like in the in-person context.
Exactly.
Because it does... This phenomenon I've never actually seen happen.
No.
Where people have an alliance and that's it, well, that's what they're doing. I have seen situations in which two people, it's usually two. I've never seen three.
Yeah.
I don't think I have.
Yeah.
If I have, I'm forgetting it. But it's two people that often align, and you know, it's a little sour grapey to be.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only because they auto align all the time, and typically they probably aren't. Mm-hmm. If they're the kind of players that do that. Like, I know exactly what happens, because eventually everyone's like, oh, they always align together, so they just start getting executed immediately.
Exactly, right.
When they're on
right.
the board together, and that's...
That's too dangerous, those two together.
Those two together, if they're next to each other, and they just get executed. And so, at that point, it's self-correcting.
Yeah, like, at tournaments, there will be things that actually happen where people know each other's reputations, where they'll be like... Nathan Barnes and Jerry Fest are Russia and Turkey. Everybody drop what you're doing. Like, right. whatever your plan was in this game, let's deal with that instead.
And then that persists until it's... I don't know what the actual formula is, but there's a certain amount of, like, beheadings that have to happen. And right. they're like, okay, they've learned their lesson.
Right.
Because then you'll have the opportunity to do it again. And people are like, mm-hmm. oh, we've killed them every time.
Mm-hmm.
They are not... They don't seem to be working together, because it's the only way for you not to get just jumped on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's a very long answer to, it's related to the question
My
you
actual
asked.
Answer to the actual question of how I would have dealt with that situation is just send a ton of public press ridiculing those five people, like, over and over and over again, and to see if, like, most, A, because it would make me feel better emotionally, and B, because maybe I could actually, like, get one of them to be embarrassed enough about this to actually, like, turn on their friends. That's actually how I would deal with that. And if all of that failed, then I would die quietly and just be like, okay, well, later, losers, and move on to another game.
I don't know, so, that's nice of you. I might actually just quit.
Would you? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time where I would never do that.
Uh-huh.
I would, like, spirit of the game, it really sucks to abandon a game, and that's true, but... When if it's clear, if these five people are publicly stating, this is what we're doing, we're in lockstep, then I might just say, well, if that's what you're doing, then we're not really playing a game anymore.
Right.
So I apologize that you're going to have to find somebody else to do this, but we all know where this is going.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you know, quit.
Right. Good luck.
Good luck.
I hope
good job.
You guys win your game.
You guys are the winners.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll publicly say, the winner, I'll agree to the five-way draw now if that's what we want to do.
Yeah, but, right. Right. Yeah,
fine. Like, I can play another game. It's great. this is a rich email. Let's keep going.
Yeah, right. There's plenty more. His next question is, have you ever introduced new players to the game and then found yourself trying to explain to them why certain choices they are making might not be very sound, either strategically or diplomatically?
Nope.
Right. How do you do this without coming across as condescending or appearing that you're just trying to manipulate them because they're new? Is it best to let them make mistakes themselves?
You know, I would. Do you want to start? You can start answering this one. I answered initially the last.
Okay.
If you don't have anything, I can.
No, I do. It is a tricky thing, and I would say that specific thing that you're talking about is a skill in diplomacy. If we had our, you know, diplomacy character sheet on there with like the 100 things that we're good or bad at in diplomacy. Like, I know, nerd alert. I don't know why I went there with that, honestly. Like, that would be one of the things.
When's the last time you had a character sheet?
Like 12 years, 13 years. You're not. Like, right around the time I started playing diplomacy.
Right.
I'd say, yeah. It still just popped into my head. I don't know why. But I feel like that's something you can get points in. And it's like. I mean, we've joked on the show before about, like, the newbie whisperer skill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there are certain people who are just better at working with new players, and that's one of the things that they do well, is they learn. It's, you know, I guess I don't have a specific answer in terms of, like, first do A, then do B, then do C, but I can say that it is an art form. There is a diplomatic way to do it if you practice that and like, you know,
that's not like practicing, but I mean, you just need to do it enough.
I would say, no, there's not, the solution is not to just let them make mistakes for themselves. Unless of course you find a way to communicate to them that, like, okay, we can do it that way, but I don't think it's going to work. And then it doesn't work, and you go, well, there you go.
He's not actually asking about new players, and I'm not disagreeing with you. He said if you're introduced a player to the game, so he's talking about the specific situation in which you already have a mentoring role. You've brought the person in, okay. Different than like someone's first tournament, and you know, they don't.
So you just happen to be on their board.
You just happen to be on their board. Right. So in this, and I'm reading between the lines here, and I'm guessing that this has happened to Robert, and he's introduced people to the game, and they feel condescended or manipulated, or he's seen it happen. Which, either or. So if you're in this situation of, you know, essentially proselytizing the game, trying to get converts and people playing. You know, you want people to enjoy the game, so you want to try to avoid these
things.
So the solution to your problem is absolutely, in the first, like, have we ever done this? Yeah, about 1,000 times. Sure. Yeah, tons and tons of time.
And sometimes we come off good, and sometimes we come off bad, and whatever.
The best way of doing it, firstly, the gold standard would be to have enough players that you're not playing, so that you can have a mentoring role and continue to do that, and you're somewhat neutral. That makes people a lot more comfortable coming to you. They don't feel as manipulated. But obviously, we can't do that every time, and we're going to assume in this situation you don't have it.
You have a position
on the board. You have a position on the board. Yeah. So the way to do it then is to, when they come to you with a question or you try to talk to them about something, make a really big and vocal demarcation of changing your hats. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is my player hat. Okay, this is my mentor hat. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say that, but you know, you want to make sure that you're like, okay, let me just switch roles here. You know, and really, you have to jettison. I guess this is the clearest answer. Jettison your interest in the game.
Yeah.
Because you know your interest in this game is to have this person play again, not to do well. Because you're going to do fine. Yeah. With players that never played before. It's actually related to your earlier question. It's not awesome to take a five-way draw when you guys just blah 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 walk through. It's also congratulations, you beat people that have never played before. It's a meaningless thing.
Yeah.
And the goal is to get them to play again. So just jettison all of that. Just fall on your sword, not blatantly, but like, just if someone's going to, okay, well, here's what's going to happen if you do that. Here's what's going to happen if you do that. You want to incrementally show the cause and effect of different aspects of it. So the manipulation thing should never come up because you shouldn't really be playing for your aggrandizing your country.
Right. And actually, in that situation, I suppose if you wanted just like one sort of vague tip as a, just sort of a trick that you can do again and again when you're in that situation again and again, let them drive a little bit. Like, let's say you're in one of these alliances with somebody who's like a new player that either you introduced to the game or just is a new player that you're hoping enjoys the game and has fun with it. And you find yourself like working with this person. A lot of times just say, we could do this either way, you know, like whatever you want. And then if they then solicit you and say, well, which way is better? Then you can be like, I'm glad you asked. I think we should do it this way. But if they don't, here's why. If they don't and they say something and it's not your favorite plan, do it anyway.
Yeah, just do it anyway.
Unless, you know, your life depends on it for some reason and you really, really want to win this game for some reason. Just do their plan and then be like, okay, well, we tried that. It didn't work very well. And then you're not condescending. Then you're not being judgmental. You're not freaking them out. Like, they tried it. It didn't work that way.
Yeah. It's nice if you... Yeah, you have to jettison... Like, the condescending, I think, is the part... I think is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. The manipulation part shouldn't be that. The condescending part... The best I could say there is... do exactly what Eric said, is let them drive a little bit, let them make choices, but try and say, okay, I'm fine with that plan. Here's something that could happen. Have you considered this? and just make it very open-ended. What about this? Have you considered this? This could be a thing. Don't speak definitively, like, this will happen, but show that you want to be able to show that you have an understanding of the game that they might not see yet.
Right.
But you're not cramming it down their throat. You're just saying, have you considered this? This could happen. Yep. This could happen. And when they see that that actually did happen, it was what you didn't, you know, sort of mention, not necessarily predicted, but mm-hmm. mention and said, well, this could happen, but let's do it. If this is what you want to do, it could work. Let's you know, be supportive. And, yeah. you know, that's the only way to get away from the con. I think you've identified one of the things that's trickiest about this relationship is the condescension. You want to be careful of that because you don't want to sort of sour the relationship.
Either. Right. And the way that you'll know that you were too condescending is when they start working with somebody else because they're sick of your crap. And that's understandable too.
Yeah. And I think going back to if you just like rechannel your interest in the game to be making sure this person not just enjoys the game, but sort of, I'll just say, gets the game.
Yeah.
I don't know of a better way of saying it because it's not like you can have fun and not get the game because that's. If you don't do enough to have them get the game, then they're just going to come back thinking it's going to be fun again and then have a different experience mm-hmm. without you sort of holding their hand. Mm-hmm. You want to prepare them for, you know, it's a little like parenting. You know, you want to prepare them for the harsh realities.
Yeah, definitely.
But you want to sort of ease them into it.
And that goes for the tactics and also the diplomatic yeah. element of it. Just so, I like to spend a lot of time, like, when I'm working with somebody who's new, just saying, like, well, when they say, well, I don't know if I should do this or I should do that, I like to always kind of say, well, who do you believe?
Yeah.
You know, like, who do you trust more? And then that they kind of, a lot of times, they'll take a step back and just be like, oh, I trust that guy more.
Do that one.
Yeah. Because that's what's important.
We actually had a game like this not that long ago. Yeah, and, you know, I think Eric and I had different experiences. I had somebody that would really wanted me to drive, and he had somebody that I think really wanted... I could be wrong.
Yeah.
They wanted to drive a little bit more. So there's also different.
Although I drove us right into the ground. Nothing for nothing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
That was fun.
That was a good little game.
The next question is, Nathan, would you hand me some more of those spicy beans?
Okay.
Oh, yep. No, that was my question to Nathan. Yeah. There you actually, go. It's
these
not
are, these are spicy beans that I made. I pickled just, them myself. I like
a couple more of those.
I'm like an episode of Portlandia over here.
Yeah, you really are. Amazing. No, there's one right. He's actually got about four more questions in this email, but he's getting a lot of airtime on it. I just want to do one of them. Okay. Eric has mentioned several times how much he hates Western triples and that if he is Germany, his price for participating is to demand three builds in 1901. My question for Eric is, are there any circumstances under which you would take part in a Western triple as either France or England? Yes, is the short answer. If I just feel like... If I feel like it'll work, but my tendency is to be the antsy one who stabs first in a Western triple situation, actually for France and England, at least doing it for a while is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like, because you get to push pieces forward and then they can always just pull back and hit Germany if they really need to, or I suppose each other if they really need to. It's not like a terrible, like, the thing that I really hate is when I'm playing against a Western triple that just won't break, and they make the game boring for those of us in the East. That's what puts me on tilt. That's what makes me crazy. Is just like, are we really playing this game again? Is this really happening again? Because it's the same game every single time. Like,
it's so rare they actually make it all the way to the end and declare a three-way draw, though.
Well, sure, but
it's
I'm
so
about, like,
rare.
But you're complaining. Ones or
what you're complaining about. Yeah. Is that you actually have to work?
No,
pretty
I'm
hard to make.
About just playing the same game. Like, I know how to do that. Like, if
I see what you're saying.
If I happen to be Austria or Russia, I'm going to have a mediocre kind of survival thing and spend all of my time like worrying about these same spots on the board, like, you know, Tyrolia and Galicia, but not really being able to do anything, and will probably end up either dead or like with some kind of a mediocre result, and it's just boring and it's annoying. And so when I am playing a Western power, like, I feel like I don't want to pay forward the boredom that well, I've experienced so often in other games, or, like, just the sameness that I've experienced so often in other games. Like, I might do one for a while if it's working as France or England, and it actually usually does work pretty well as France or England, at least for a while.
Yeah, but then, 2004,
then so, there will be some sad Austrian or Russian player on the other side that will just be, like, getting ground down and be super bored, and they'll be like, come on, let's just do something different. This is stupid. And I'm usually, like, the easiest sell on that, like, yeah, you're right, this is stupid, and then I'll just, like, stab somebody, and like, maybe not even with help, I'll just do it and see what happens. And so you probably don't want me in your Western Triple in any event.
Unless I certainly,
like,
don't.
Yeah, unless it's like, I like the other two Western players and all of the other four Eastern players are, like, super boring. And
I don't, if there's, like, a rat
or something.
I mean, if there's a very clear rat happening.
Oh, like Russia, Austria, Turkey. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah, sure. And you have to, you feel like you have to do it at least for a little while, but ugh.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's a terrible thing to do. Yeah, I'll do them if you force me to do them. I never propose them. I don't think I ever propose them. They're just boring.
All. Yeah.
And they are.
Or I guess maybe if, say, I'm England and France and Germany just come to me and they're like, here's the deal, we're working together. Would you want to get in on this or you want to get killed? And, like, I really feel like that's actually what's going on. I can think of a time or two that's happened.
Yeah, that has happened.
Like, gun to the head, you're in our Western Triple now. Okay. I'm in your Western Triple now. Yeah.
Finger guns. Let's do this.
Exactly. So, that's that.
Yeah. All right. Next.
I don't ever want to talk about Western Triples on the show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we will.
The last. Is anything else he's talking about here? He makes a joke about St. Petersburg.
Yes. Very good.
Very good. You're hilarious.
Yeah.
No, we don't still argue about that.
We gotta move on.
We don't still argue
about
it.
But thank you for an extremely thought provoking and time consuming email. We enjoyed it. Hear from you soon. Okay. On to.
Who is it? It's Eric, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other Eric. Eric Rodriguez, specifically. Oh, he just says, I'm from Indiana and have recently gotten into diplomacy. I love when this happens.
Yeah.
It's like a new place, a new... first of all, I would like to say I really enjoy your show. Second, I'm looking for tournaments to go to and thought this would be a good place to ask.
It is a good place to ask, although, what's the next tournament other than the one you're going to, which is Invitational? So that doesn't really count.
Yeah.
The next tournament is in the first week of February. It's TempleCon.
Oh, there you go.
And TempleCon, I think, is in Providence.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But just Google TempleCon, and it's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a little ways from you.
No.
So probably you're not going to have time to,
right.
to go to that
I was just
going to
say, if you're in Indiana, there is Chicago, probably. Not that it depends what part of Indiana, but I'm guessing it's closer than most places. You could drive there.
You could drive there probably within 5 hours or so.
Yep.
So if you haven't been connected to the Windy City Weasels, you should definitely dial into that.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be for tournament play. They do games all the time.
They are the most active diplomacy hobby group in the U.S. They're phenomenal. They're doing like 3 or 4 games a month.
And their tournament is in the summer.
August.
Yeah, usually around August-ish. Yeah. And Gen Con, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, Gen Con's pretty close, too.
Gen Con, and... I mean, it's sort of we don't talk about that tournament much because I think neither of us have ever been.
But yeah, I've never been.
They have a diplomacy tournament at Gen Con every year, and people go.
They totally do.
Yeah.
That's right in your own neighborhood. And then, trying to think what else is up in the immediate future. Usually, the diplomacy season is spring to late fall. The tournament, there used to be a tournament, I ran a tournament in January. The reason I ran the tournament in January is because no one was doing anything.
Yep.
So,
Do you need a minute?
Yeah, no, I don't need a minute.
I'm good.
Yeah. Not a good riddance. It was a good ride. You know, I jettisoned it before it started to suck.
Fair enough.
Left on a high note. You got to do that.
Fair enough.
It was a nice round decade. That's good. I'm going to do something in the future. Who knows?
Thanks, Eric, for the email.
Yeah,
not
hope that helped.
More. That I want to read.
If you want, last thing, Eric, you can always go to the Diplomatic Pouch. They kind of maintain, people opt into it. You can check out there.
Or Diplomacy World, a lot of times has stuff.
Diplomacy World. Oh, if you read Diplomacy World, it's a diplomacy e-magazine.
Something we always mean to talk about on this show more often.
It's great. Yeah. And they're pumping out like an episode every 2 months. Mm-hmm. Not an episode. We pump out episodes. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty bulky book, too. Like 50, 60 pages. There's a lot of stuff in there. So you can always look there. They always have a tournament announcement.
Occasionally he'll let somebody put in a 20-page article that's just rules for a variant that Nathan Barnes and him invented. But I think that's probably how it gets so long.
Because
people just write for days and doesn't edit anything.
Yeah,
that's good. Probably should.
Have we ever talked about our variant on the show?
Yeah. Well, I remember talking about, like, right after I wrote that article. I remember talking about, like, everybody should just go read it. Like,
yeah. That was Robitussin article, right?
Yeah.
Robitussin one.
Yeah. We just mentioned variants, and also there was part of the question from the first email that we read from Robert that we didn't read, which was about, have we ever thought about doing a show about variants, like actual variants?
No.
Yes, we've thought of it, but I can't really think how to structure it.
The problem
is, are we just gonna, like, we don't play them very much?
Yeah, I've played a lot of them. I've played Colonial, I've played, what did I play? That Madness, or the one where there's 34 players?
Oh, Chaos.
Chaos, yeah. Chaos.
Fun. That's fun.
That was fun. You know, I've played a lot of them.
I guess, I don't know.
They're kind of like, why am I playing this game? Crowded, played a lot of Crowded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Played a lot of Wilson.
Wilson, I suppose, if that counts. I guess my issue with it is that, like, I don't know if we would just have somebody come on and talk about all the really popular variants, and we'd just be like, oh, that's interesting, and then not play it, or... I don't know. I can't figure out, like, how to do the show about variants. And, several people have emailed us asking how come we haven't done this yet, and that's why. Maybe we will, but I don't have a good idea about how
to do it. It's because we're elitist snobs, and we're, you know, we're kind of like, well, why don't you just play actual diplomacy?
Or that, yeah. Let's see. Anyway, Charlie Apps. Yes, because this segment, the hot off the press, very, very long. Just wanted to send you some hate mail.
Oh, good.
Hate, because I'm now addicted to your podcast and have yet to play a single match of Diplomacy. That is awesome.
That's perfect.
That's we're breaking ground here. I originally purchased the board game for my dad about 5 years ago and never got around to playing it. I encountered a segment about Diplomacy on This American Life where David Hill took U.S. Ambassador Dennis Ross as his coach to the World Championships. It sounded right up my alley, so I dug around for a dedicated podcast and found you guys. All right.
Well, it's good, because we are the only one.
Yes. It's good that he found us, though, right? Instead of none at all.
That's true.
I'm already on the fifth episode, and I'm absolutely kicking myself for not having initiated a game 5 years back. I'm searching frantically around Vancouver. We know tons of Vancouver people for a local game. I've since moved to Canada from Australia. I'm confused. I've since moved to Canada. Oh, we bought it when he was in Australia.
Got it.
Now he lives in Canada. Okay. But have to give one of the online versions. Might have to give one of the online versions a crack. Looking forward to listening through the rest of your episodes. Keep up the great work. Your new fan, Charlie. All right.
Thanks, awesome. Charlie.
On so many levels. Loads of Vancouver people play Diplomacy. They used to come to all of our events. I don't know whether they are currently having
a regular game. Yeah, there's a game at Drexel Games in Vancouver, downtown Vancouver. So, Drexel.
Perfect.
It's on, I believe, January 31st, I want to say.
Listen to you.
Yeah, no, I keep up with the stuff. So, yeah, there's a group that does that. There's two resources for you, because you're in our neck of the woods, so I'm a little more up on this stuff. There is a meetup group for the Pacific Northwest that's mostly Canadians, frankly.
Yep.
And so subscribe to that. It's just like Diplomacy, Pacific Northwest Diplomacy, I believe. There's also a Facebook group. Excuse me.
There you go.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
that mic.
Group. that you can subscribe to, and a lot of stuff, all the games get announced. So, like, when Portland has a game, it gets announced. When Vancouver has a game, it gets announced. When Seattle had a tournament, it got announced there.
Also, this will add to the ever-growing, if you really are Australian, the ever-growing cast of Canadian players that have something other than a Canadian accent.
Yeah, no, it's always there. Great. Yeah, yeah, no, it's good.
I have...
There's a cavalcade of them.
England and Scotland off the top of my head already living up there, so now I'll add Australia to that.
That's perfect. All from all over the Dominion.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
The Commonwealth is well represented.
So, yeah, Charlie, check those out, and yeah, maybe we'll see you at the game. We don't get up to Canada very often, but we do occasionally have people come down, and we're... Eric's tossing around the idea of asking someone else to organize a game, so that's good.
Yeah, right.
I'm a facilitator.
Pretty high-ranking person. I got people for that.
I got people for that. So yeah, keep in touch. We'd love to meet you.
It also reminded me this email to him saying that like he heard it from the This American Life podcast and all that kind of stuff. It kind of like I've noticed just weird little things all of a sudden where diplomacy all of a sudden. I don't know if it's because of that or if it's just coincidence and I've been in the right place in the right time, but I just had to bring this up on the show because I've seen really weird, unexpected references to diplomacy places.
Oh, yeah.
Just the other day, a friend of ours put on like her Twitter and her Facebook a picture of a Cards Against Humanity card that refers to diplomacy, like something like 6 hours of playing diplomacy or something that is presumably some bad experience that you play like in the game cards. Like when does that happen? Like that some other game refers to diplomacy. And then, this is just a super nerd shout out here, but, one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to, if you guys haven't found it, it's amazing. And they happen to be doing one about World War I right now. Yeah. So if you're into diplomacy and want the history part of it, it's called Hardcore History. The guy is Dan Carlin and he's amazing. And that is if you have hundreds of hours of your life to spend listening to podcasts about like historical components. He just released one a couple of days ago when I was all psyched and just spent 4.5 hours listening to his newest one or whatever. And right smack in the middle of it, he all of a sudden was like comparing actual diplomatic events that happened in leading up to the U.S. joining in World War I. He says something about like, this would be a good idea if you were playing the board game Risk, and then he kind of catches himself. He's like, or diplomacy. If you're playing diplomacy, maybe there's a board game called that. If you don't know, but it doesn't work in real life. And I was just like,
how did this suddenly become a cultural touch point?
Might not really be a thing. Might be the only two references I ever see ever again.
Well, no,
something else to diplomacy. But I
just the other day, Will Wheaton's tabletop podcast. Well, he has a video cast that his whole intro is about the game diplomacy and like how terrible. You know, he's talking about cooperative games and he's like,
I buried the lead there with the Will Wheaton. Like,
Will Wheaton came out and it was like a 30-second thing, but it was still diplomacy and like how diplomacy wounds cut deep, et cetera, et cetera. Which is hilarious that you don't know that because I put it up on our Diplomacy Cast Facebook. So everyone listening to this knows. Yeah. You have no idea.
Anyway, so that segment's over and we're going
to... I'm going to shut it down. I got to go back to 19... I got to get my AOL account done. I got to go back to 1999 and 98 and is that on Prodigy? Because...
I've been paying my subscription fees for that, so I'll get right on.
All right, let's get off the presses and let's go to the next thing.
Moving on.
Power plays. So power plays.
Yeah.
It's been a little while. Did we do this? We haven't done this a couple episodes.
No, We did England, France. We did a Russia, Turkey.
So now it's time for Austria, Italy.
Yeah, obviously. Sorry, Germany.
Yeah.
We'll get to you.
It's just no one likes you.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of the thing.
And this is a fun one because it's one of those sort of weird spots on the board. And I know we've talked about it individually, like the two powers and like...
It's the bordering home centers, is what it is.
Right. And we've agonized over this as people who love Austria and Italy, both of us, to different degrees. But it it's so weird that it bears some specific discussion.
Sure.
So
it does.
Yeah. I found notes from old episodes of this that we did where we had like some structure.
And let's do
we're
it.
Just going to hope that we did that before, so this is sort of compliant and matches the.
Well,
other
it's nice to say we have a protocol that we think we might have used in the past. Yes. Which just seems like how most governments operate.
we might not.
Yeah, we wrote it down, so we're gonna do it.
Okay. We will start with the why to make it work part.
Oh, yeah.
Seems to be the first. In other words,
what's the appeal?
Right.
So, you know, the obvious appeal is like there's a natural conflict there. So the easiest way to resolve that conflict is to say there's no conflict. We're working together.
Yes, because it's so easy for the two to just start at war. Or specifically, it's so easy for Italy to start at war with Austria.
Yeah, it's pretty crap for Austria to go, this fleet, I'm going to sail this right on into Venice.
Yep. Just up in that junk right there.
Because, it's rare that happens.
But then when you do that, then you've mostly turned your back on two guys that happen to make a really good alliance that are on the other side of you.
Yeah.
And have usually nothing better to do than just jump
more on that. We'll be wrapping around to that one in a second.
Yeah. And from the Italy perspective, Italy sometimes doesn't have all that much to do except attack Austria early on in the game.
And there are reasons that you might not want to do that.
But there are reasons you might not want to do that. One of them is the sort of classic, I mean, the case I always wind up making when I'm Austria, and I feel like my Italian is thinking, like looking hungrily at my centers as the game starts, is I always like to say, okay, but you'll be dessert.
Yeah.
Which is... can be very true.
Yeah, it can be very true. And, you know, we'll talk about this more later.
And then if the Italian says, yeah, well, that's fine. I think I can probably just get Russia to stab Turkey after we kill you. I say, I hope you're wrong.
I'll tell you. Yeah. So there's definitely a temptation on the Italian part to just gobble up Austria. Mm-hmm. And the reasons that this is appealing are there's usually three. We're going to start with that.
Yeah.
You're looking at the rest of the board, and it makes the most sense for you to ally with Austria, either because you suspect an RT, or because... And this goes for both Austria and Italy. But mostly I'm focusing on the Italian, because almost always all the Austria is trying to do in the first year is just get the two built.
Just make Italy leave them alone.
Yeah, that's right. Basically your strategy if you're not aligned with Italy is just trying to... You're trying to keep people off you for a year or a year and a half. Mm-hmm. It's really what you're looking to do. So from the Italian perspective, when you're trying to make this choice, you're looking at, okay, well, you think there's alliances on the board that sort of shove you in this particular direction.
Yep.
There are other extenuating circumstances about the player in Austria that you want to work with them.
Yep.
Or three, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, it makes sense on the board to do it in a way that people don't suspect. There can be extenuating circumstances in which people don't expect it, or they think you're not going to align, or... there's a lot of chaos, and maybe you're the only alliance, but there's definitely, and I guess basically it boils down to, I'm just talking about different aspects of the same thing. Mm-hmm. The board will dictate when you have to do this. It's appealing when...
And I'd add, I guess maybe, if it just feels like Austria and Russia just want to target Turkey... for some reason, like if there's just sort of is consensus about a 3-on-1.
Oh yeah, definitely jump on that.
Then it's right. Then that's sort of a weird time to just go it solo into Austria.
Yeah.
So then maybe instead of going it solo into Austria, if you feel like there's an
AR, pick up a couple builds and then go after Austria.
Yeah, right. Exactly. then you say, oh well, I'll just get in on that, because I mean, basically, if you're Italy, you've got three possible targets early in the game, right? And if you have not one of these three, then you're probably doing something wrong most of the time. Like, usually your option one is Austria, option two is Turkey, and option three is France, right?
And for those people that are raising your hands and saying, well, what about Germany? That's not an option. That is a waste of your time.
Right.
That is actually basically all you're saying is, hey, you know what I'd like to do? Help France.
Yeah. You can screw around in Germany if you feel like you can kind of get the better of the situation somehow.
But you can't, because you can't hold it.
Usually not. Usually, unless Germany is just going to completely collapse or something.
You can't, even if you follow up, you can't hold it, unless without French help. Mm-hmm. And really, basically, all you've done is get the same supply center you would have gotten if you attacked Austria or France or Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Except now it's, like, surrounded on six sides.
Yeah, right.
You know,
exactly.
Like, Munich is the center of the board. Like, just... There's got to be a really good reason for you doing it. So the three are, as Eric said.
Yeah. And so I suppose any time that you've decided for whatever reason that Turkey ought to be the target, then you probably want to be on the same side as Austria. So there's your AI situation from the Italian perspective. From the Austrian perspective...
You agree to anything.
Right. Again, you're happy to just score an ally.
Yeah, that's all you're trying to do. So... I mean, we're talking about an alliance. Obviously, we're talking from the get-go, 01. We're not talking about a mid-game beginning of an alliance.
Yeah.
So just clarify.
I guess that's really all that needs to be said about, like, the circumstances under which you'd consider it.
The board will dictate when you need to do it, because otherwise, Italy is almost always in a position where Austria is looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, you're allying with Austria because one of the other two look good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just last thing. If for some reason the board says you need to attack France, that's another really good reason to ally with Austria, just so that Austria gets
or at least have like some non-aggression. You know, like, hey, I'm walking Venice to Piedmont. Very first thing I'm doing in this game, you're not going to be in Trieste after I do that, right?
Right.
You know, and then there's like a nice long little... non-aggression that you can do. Now, whether that's necessarily a great thing for Italy is another question.
Yeah,
we've
covered this on different episodes. My opinion on it.
Yeah, better be sure that you know exactly what's going on. I mean, I've had that work, or, well...
Have you had it work?
Yeah, well, once or twice is Italy where I've just been like, okay, it seems like there's some AR business here, and I want to go west for some reason. And... just leave me alone.
And Austria is...
if you feel like they're gonna, then maybe...
Austria is always going to. For at least in the initial.
Yeah.
Because they've got bigger fish to fry. They don't care about Venice.
Right. Then Austria becomes your problem in about 2 years, assuming AR has succeeded and he's gotten a couple of builds. Because then where's he going next?
Which is the problem with this approach, because you can't get that much out of France before AR turns around.
Correct. Yeah,
you're usually about to get Marseille... And then, like, three builds go down from the Austrian, and it's like, armies!
Right. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, actually. If you think, for whatever reason, A, you have an Austria that'll just go do something else, and B, you really have some serious chance at, say, getting, like, Tunis plus Marseille plus Spain in the time that it's going to take Austria.
And we're talking 03.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you have to have Spain by 03.
Right.
You almost have to have it, because Austria and Russia are going to crack Turkey,
mm-hmm.
assuming they do it well and they don't muck it up. They're going to crack them fairly fast.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's Austria, Turkey cracking Russia, that's
even faster.
Yeah, but really, so that's not really the AI. That's like an A and an I that are just doing their own thing.
Right.
That's not exactly
the AI is like, okay. Those are the circumstances in which you should do it. The AI is really for expediting the destruction of Turkey almost always. Mm-hmm. I have done it the other way when I destroyed Russia first.
Mm-hmm.
It's pain. It's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a little awkward. So
from there, I guess the more obvious, more straightforward thing is, all right, you're doing this AI as part of an early AIR where everybody's just going to take down Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
The tactics there almost don't need to be repeated. Like, I'm sure we've covered it other times. The Italian wants to do the full-on Lepanto thing where he's like setting up to shove fleets into Turkey south, while the Austrian is sort of coordinating with the Russian to, like, pound on, you know, the Black
Sea. Ideally, the Austrians are in a position to help you into the Western Med. Not the Western Med, excuse me.
Right, because he'd be in Greece to support you into Aegean, or you can try and sneak into the East Med and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's we don't need to. That's a Lepanto sort of opening. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
You guys find the episode or, Google it. We won't get into that. Really, what we should be focusing on is not with the Russia, because that's when the tactics are a little bit more complicated.
Talking about the two-on-two kind of a
thing. Two-on-two.
Where you feel forced into it by the fact that, oh, crap, Nathan Barnes and Jerry Fester are Russia and Turkey.
Oh, nice. I like how you did that.
Brought that back
for the beginning. Yeah. No, but I want to take a second and just specifically talk about that as sort of not really a warning, but just to raise a flag, which is somewhat obvious, but I want to make sure that we say it. if you form a very obvious AI in Spring of 01 or Fall of 01,
yeah,
you're going to probably prompt an RT.
Yeah, right. That's a good point. Like, we talk about it as if it's always reactive, but it's not necessarily. I had a game like that, and I feel like I even talked about it on the show, like, I want to say, like, at WAC last year, where we were doing an AI because we felt like we had to, because we thought there was going to be an RT.
Yeah.
And in fact, by doing super aggressive early moves to combat the RT, we made an RT.
Yeah. So you got to know that.
Yep.
You got to be aware that that's going to be a reaction. So, which is going to come up when we talk a little bit about, that's going to come up now.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this RT.
Yeah. The AI.
Yeah. Excuse me. See? You see how even mentioning AI leads you to an RT. If you're going to do the AI, consider doing the Key Lepanto. It's fairly obvious, but you can, if you're a bit theatrical,
mm-hmm,
and the players aren't, it depends on the mix on the board, so you can fool people, mm-hmm, with the Key Lepanto.
Depends on the people.
Depends on the people.
Like, that can also be the biggest red flag that there,
exactly,
is to the rest of the board, that, holy crap, there's going to be this giant,
right,
AI if they know the move. And
if they know the move.
Know your audience.
Know your audience.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely consider, you know, I'm kind of sad it's called the Key Lepanto. I'd rather it be called something else. But it's more of a masked AI.
Brass balls.
Yeah.
Lepanto or something.
So that's one. Two, the one I prefer, mm-hmm, is opening up aggressively against Austria. You open up by going to Tyrolia, Venice, you drop to the Ionian.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of attacking, just start marching over the top.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I was alluding to this earlier. It's messy, and it's definitely an attack on Russia. But it can work, surprisingly. I mean, I made it work a number of times.
Or there is an in-between thing between those two, which, yeah, is the one where you do the Lepanto, but then Venice opens up to Tyrolia, and just Tyrolia is walking around, and you still are leaving yourself the setup where you convoy down to Tunis,
yeah,
to take it that way. But then you just sort of have a spare army that is sitting in the center of the board, irritating everybody. And at some point when I've sort of done it like that, I just kind of go to the Austrian, just tell me what you want me to
do
this piece
just,
every turn. Like,
yeah, and if you want to solidify an AI, that's a good way of doing it, because, mm-hmm, the Austrian just starts to feel ownership over that unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that unit is supplied by Venice.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of be like, oh, it's your unit.
Yeah.
It's supplied by Venice. Obviously, it's the first thing I'm going to take off if you take Venice. And you kind of get to a point where it makes, you know, the Austrians are pretty invested. They're like, mm-hmm, oh, well, I have this huge tactical advantage, this extra unit, which can crack whatever's going on. Like, typically, the Warsaw supporting Galicia sort of, or the Ukraine supporting Galicia, that little thing gets cracked pretty easily when you have, you know, this army floating around in Bohemia and
right, or Silesia or something.
Yeah.
Drive Germany crazy.
Drives Germany
whatever.
Crazy.
Whatever.
Confuses the rest of the board. It's a fun little thing. It's a fun little thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have had done. It's also fun with two. I just want to say it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious.
The thing about just having that thing, right? Both of the armies just wandering around, just doing anti-Russian.
It's pretty. Sure. It's pretty
can't
obnoxious.
Be good. The other thing about that is, like, if it depends on who exactly. Like, if you're the Italian, it depends on who exactly your Austrian is and how much they're trusting you. Because the thing about that is, as it's walking all around and in helpful places,
right,
it doesn't stop bordering an Austrian home center for a really long time. Like
I think you're sensing why I like this.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so if you ever just like, oh, well, this isn't working.
This
oh,
is not going quite fast enough for
I
me.
I took Vienna instead.
Sorry.
So, You can't just do that and assume that it's always going to be okay because, hey, we're an AI. Like, some Austrias are not going to be okay with that ever, and they're just going to be like, just do something else with that army. The simpler way to do it is just to, like, you know, you're going to have to trust each other for, like, two seasons total because of the adjacent home supply center thing.
Mm-hmm.
But after two seasons, you can at least get it to a point where, like, okay, look, Trieste is empty, Venice is empty. As long as we're not building anything in those spots, then we're fine. Yeah. Like then we're just rolling. But obviously, then you don't get that extra little bit of forward position that you could get if you guys really trust each other.
Yeah.
So
which and it also you know obviously it just depends on what you're up against. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a really aggressive RT, and you're going to need to be kind of silly to try and combat it.
Yes, and that's where like the other crazy things come in, like the Kilo Panto, where you're like, okay, it's on. Let's get that other army into the Balkans, like by any means necessary.
Yeah, we need it.
Or if not that one, the other alternative is, hey, I'll skip Trieste and convoy myself into Greece, Tunis. As the Italian, I won't even take Tunis. I'll just convoy myself straight into Greece instead. So we have the extra army up that way.
Yeah.
The downside to that one is the Austrian doesn't usually get a second build in 1901.
Yeah.
So it's you're kind of like trading an army for an army, but like some position and then Tunis in your back pocket There's pluses and minuses on that one, but
it'll depend on the board and how it's going and
et cetera. But there are panicky things that you can do, and again, those are also things that can look like super aggressive AI things if you've misread the situation and Russia and Turkey aren't some kind of like totally unbreakable thing.
And the reason we keep I guess I should be very clear about this as well. The reason we keep bringing this up is that it often happens that you have this 2-on-2 thing in the East. And
which sucks, and we warned you against it.
Really hard because there's nothing worse than because it can't. It's balanced. It's fairly balanced. If both people are if all four people are committed to their opposing alliances and all ram at each other in sort of the traditional way and don't do anything too funky to get ahead of it, like we were talking about earlier, like the Italian throwing an extra army over the top or something else. If they do it fairly normally and not with it, it locks and it's and you just sit there butting heads.
Way better tactically or lucky.
Things being equal, if everyone knows what they're doing, it locks and you can't really move. And you kind of start this staring contest at each other while the West just is developing, and they're sorting their stuff out. They're figuring it out. You know, lose a year.
And and it's usually the West that breaks that one way or the other. Like, all of a sudden, Russia's under attack and can't do anything about it anymore, and that's when AI starts to win. Or, alternatively, all of a sudden, France starts sailing into the Med, and then Italy falls apart, and then you lose. And so
it's just not good for anybody in the East.
If you're having one of those 2-on-2s, the only thing that could possibly make it good is if you get some Western help the right way. So that's something that you should, if you're in one of these 2-on-2s, you should be working on.
Yeah, the only person that could potentially benefit is Turkey because you're so far back, and in that case, you're already doing this. Of course, you're already talking to France. You're already talking to Germany.
Of course,
but come down. But
even so, it's not the situation Turkey wants to be in.
No, because you're just replacing these people that are all over you for new people that are all over you.
Right. You wanted to like actually get out of the box, and in fact, what's maybe happened is like you've sort of stayed in the box. But then somebody's come to your rescue. It's not a way to solo as Turkey.
Oh yeah, there's no way.
That way. Like
that's why we're talking about this, and you want to really avoid it with the AI because you can trigger an RT if it's not there. So I honestly would recommend either avoiding it if you don't know if there's an RT. Avoiding it from from the get go, or doing it in a way that is delayed realization that there is an AI.
Yeah, and that can just be as simple as, like, if there's, say, an AIR, like, Italy is just like, I'm just doing my own thing, setting up for maybe a Lepanto, blah, 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 blah. Me and Austria aren't, like, sharing dots a whole bunch or anything like that. I'm just kind of, like, cruising on down, built a fleet. You don't really know what I'm up to yet. I might go west. I might still stab Austria, blah, 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 blah. And then you get enough deception out of that Russia and Turkey might sort of like fall to fighting amongst themselves instead of feeling like they have to like stiff up and fight against you, at which point then you start doing all that like crazy Lepanto Med crap.
And it works. The interesting thing about Italy and Austria is that they have some pretty rote moves that are like pretty much you expect. And if you're attempting to lull RT into sort of just quibbling with one another rather than solidifying, focus a little bit more on doing those rope moves.
Right.
You know, just the same thing. Well, okay, well, you know, Venice holds. Rome to Naples, Naples to the Ionian, Venice to, not Venice, Vienna to Trieste, Trieste to, Trieste to Albania, Budapest to Serbia. Like, the boring stuff to kind of lull them into not
this
worrying about
just
it.
A standard game in the East, and we don't really know what's happening.
Yeah.
And like, in that case, Austrian, Russian, and Turkish moves in the Balkans are really going to decide, like, what happens, right. What shakes down.
It also, frankly, gives you options.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. But no, we're talking about AI. We're not talking about I here. I do have one more question, though, on that just came to mind. Sure. If you're wanting to do AI, and you have this situation where Russia and Turkey aren't quite getting along, that I've been in this awkward situation before where I'm Austria, and normally, like, okay, I want my Italian ally. Not normally, but like in some cases, I want my Italian ally, and that's good. And I want Russia and Turkey to be fighting, and that's also good. And I get that. So I get my wishes. I get an Italian ally, and I get a Russia-Turkey that are fighting. And then, so my normal thing that I would think you do here as Austria is, you're like, all right, we'll just take out Turkey and then see what happens next. But what about that situation where actually Turkey's selling me something pretty good here? I'm Austria. Turkey's selling me something pretty good. I still want to work with Italy, but now I kind of want to work with Italy and Turkey. Is this a big danger to the, like, who I don't want to work with here is Russia. Is this a big danger to an AI, I guess, is my question. Because I can never decide what to do in that situation.
Well, I think, like, you need to talk to, I think the only way to Italy's the one that's going to dictate that one for you. You go to Italy and you say, hey, you know, Turkey's talking like he wants to attack Russia. Mm-hmm. I think we would make quicker progress if we did that. What are your thoughts on going west? What are your thoughts on...
But then the Italian a lot of time gets worried because, well, I don't want Turkey to get anything. They'll build another fleet and then I'm stuffed. You know, how am I ever going to make any progress once Turkey's at five? Because you just helped him into Romania or something. Yep. Yeah, and that's where that can get... Like, I guess maybe another way of phrasing the same question is, as an Italian, should you insist if it's close? No, you're sticking with Russia, buddy. Or we're off.
You know, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because, I'm just thinking about it. I'm putting myself in that Italian position. And how would I feel if Austria decided to work with Turkey and I'm working with Austria?
Right.
I'll tell you, it makes attacking Austria a lot more appealing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it's almost... Because what else are you going to do? Like, if Russia's falling apart and Turkey's growing... Then what does Italy do?
Italy almost
stalls.
Has no... Well,
yeah.
You either go after... There's three options. You stall, go after France, or you continue plowing into Turkey and say... And, like, to say...
Right.
There's a way of doing it.
Yeah, if Italy is just like, all right, whatever, dude, I'm just going to keep attacking Turkey anyway. And then, and then Austria is just like... To his new Turkish friend, I don't know what's up with that guy, sorry.
Yeah, we had an alliance. I'm with you now.
I don't know. I'm sorry he's still attacking you, you know.
Like,
and then you can do sort of a long con thing as Austria, where you're like, oh, that's rough. Yeah, no, I know you just got Romania, but you lost Smyrna because Italy just won't leave you alone. Yeah. That's definitely the more chaotic and
well, if you can make it work, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But that's a tough sell.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you have to have an Italian that is willing to put up with that sort of ping-ponging.
Right.
And if you're lucky, you're able to do it in a way where you're feeding as Austria, you're feeding inside information to the Italians, so they're making progress.
Mm-hmm.
Some Italians would be willing to do that, but I'll tell you, I think it endangers the alliance.
Yeah, it does. It does. So there, we've learned something ourselves
just by puzzling
through that. Okay, so that's all about sort of like the early game, like the initial, like how it shakes down. So let's say that
for bizarre reasons we want to continue just going with this alliance.
Yeah, well, moving forward, and it's not necessarily that bizarre. Like, what happens after you've killed Turkey, I guess, is what this one comes down to. That sort of might be the mid game.
Well, it depends on how you positioned yourself. But the natural thing, obviously, is to, you know, branch out. You want to turn Italy around and flood the the Western Med.
Okay,
and you want to, because you have to do that. You should be doing that before Turkey's dead. because at that point, it's 1903, 1904, the West has figured themselves out a little bit, and mm-hmm. France is starting to look at Italy and Austria working together.
Or if France is dying, then England.
Yeah, whoever the power is
yeah.
over there.
Right.
I mean, if you're lucky, mm-hmm. if you're extremely lucky, France is being just beat up on. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just luck right there. But wherever it is, before the second you have any spare fleet, you should be never leaving the Ionian at all. Yeah. Ideally, maybe parking it in Tunis. Like, you want to have fleets just ready to go.
Austria doesn't ever want any more fleets.
Oh, no.
Fleet either is piffed or is just sort of in constant, like, turkey duty of
yeah.
some sort. Like,
yeah, yeah. You want to get rid of that thing if you can. It would be better to get rid of it. There might be some fleet advantage tactically to having the extra one.
Mm-hmm.
It might be something where that's your extra fleet to send the other direction. I mean, in the same way that one Italian army is Austrian, that Austrian fleet being Italian is
yep.
also another good way to sort of have that goodwill and that
yep.
sort of like, you know, yeah. it's a really good way to keep that alliance. It's one of the few where that's it's very, very common to have that one unit that is just the other person's.
Yep. Yep. It is kind of tricky. Like, if Turkey's, like, legitimately dead, at some point, the digging out of that corner part of that alliance can be a little bit tricky. Just
yeah.
because, like, Turkey is the deadest dead end in Deadsville. It's not like you can, like, slingshot out of Turkey and then to anywhere else that useful. You kind of just have to, like, yeah. back out. I mean, I guess maybe...
Or you go to Sevastopol.
Yeah, I guess maybe, yeah. The just turning around and throwing it all against Russia would be the next bit. But there's not that much Italian gain there. There's plenty of Austrian gain.
Yeah.
Especially if you're Germany, who we haven't even really talked about yet, is on board with this, because he is the third central in any kind of, you know, like, we're talking about an alliance between two central powers. Like,
yeah.
You should... From early game on, if you've got an AI, you should be selling Germany on the, hey, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
Look, we're working together, and all those guys with their nice little corners, like, we can't be squabbling amongst ourselves because yeah. that benefits them and not us.
Which you're doing if you go back to our Austria episode, which you're doing anyway. You're always, as Austria, you're always selling Germany on mm-hmm. on the Anschluss, on the, mm-hmm. we're in this together. If I go down, you go down. Let's, you know,
of course,
you should always be doing that.
The other thing that you can do in an AI is... If you were an AIR, you can stay an AIR and then turn around and attack Germany next, or like some combination of Germany and France. And that actually has some power to it if everybody stays coordinated. Like, I know you're like going across the line like sooner than seems intuitive, but that one turn where it's like Warsaw to Silesia, Vienna to Bohemia, and Venice to Tyrolia all at once, and you're like, hello, Munich, and
yeah,
and
that's like, the unfortunate, I mean, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
It depends on the scoring system. Like, you're right. committing to, that either is a three-way draw, or Austria dies in that,
True.
in that scenario.
True.
Because there's going to be no way
yeah,
to take out Russia while Austria's holding the line.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, if that's what you want to do, if that's
you want to do just an AI, you kind of need to target Russia next.
You kind of need to target Russia.
And possibly France at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's if you want to take the AI. The AI is not the worst of the alliances. Like, it's very entangled
mm-hmm.
as opposed to,
yeah.
you know, the RT and the EF. They're very much... It's much more linear. It's like, I have the north, you have the south,
right.
blah, blah, blah. And there's not a lot of intermingling.
Right, yeah. No, that's true. I mean, you can just do AI for 3 years, someone dies, and then you guys just fall on each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, somebody stabs somebody, and that's the end of it, and that's fine. Like,
yeah, it's a tough...
Successful games that way.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Yeah.
It's just a tough alliance to really... It's not like AT, mm-hmm. but it's a tough alliance to keep alive
mm-hmm.
past, I would say, early mid-game.
But more generally, you just need to sort of be thinking about a next target soon. That next target ought to probably be Russia. Most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Unless Russia happened to be your first target, and
then it's
Italy ought to be building fleets, and Austria ought to be building armies. And
yeah,
and
you should... I mean, if you're thinking about how the line is how it's going to be demarcated,
mm-hmm.
you kind of think of it as a reverse stalemate line going from mm-hmm. England to Turkey, and Austria is going to have the sort of, like, the northeast half, and Italy is going to have the... the southwest half.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
Because you're going to end up with... And it does... It favors Austria a little bit.
Honestly. It does. But don't be afraid to trade a dot or two in this case.
Like, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. In this alliance, more than most, don't be afraid to just be like... If you're Italy, you're just like, oh, well, you're gaining two this year, and I'm nowhere near anything I can take. Can I just have Trieste?
Right. That is the best thing about this alliance.
Yeah.
Where, like, you take RT and EF, it is much more difficult to trade centers.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to have things pretty demarcated, and it's typically really easy to just pop something into one of the others, which again... One of the things I like about the AI is it does have a certain... After it gets off the ground, it doesn't get squished.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get locked. It has a certain amount of stability to it. Like, there's a lot of... It's easy to build trust, and it's easy to kind of balance things as opposed to some of the other ones that are cleaner.
It's commit. Funny because it's... Right. It's like you're so entangled, and it's so easy to stab each other that you actually just, like, start trusting each other at some point. You're because like, well... Why aren't we dead yet? Oh, because we trust each other. Okay, well, then let's keep doing that. Like, because we're winning.
It definitely has it can be tough, but it definitely has like this feedback loop of trust constantly. Whereas some of the other, like the EF and the RT, you're kind of independent.
Yeah.
Once it gets off the ground.
They're more set up for like the grand stab where like it all happens all at once and everything falls apart. Whereas, Austria and Italy, it's just sort of like routinely like, I know you can stab me.
And it just kind of gets to a point. And maybe somebody does stab.
Right.
Maybe it does happen. But I think that there's a certain amount of mutually assured destruction that kind of lends some stability to it.
Yep.
So that's, you know, that's...
There's your mid game.
There's your mid game. So end game.
Yeah. Well, I there's actually not that much to say about this. I don't think I would say that the end game is either you guys do this to just a crazy degree and do extremely well, and then you're like you're both at 10, and then somebody stabs somebody.
Yeah.
Or it's the situation in the West forces some kind of an end game into like a three-way draw with the two of you and somebody in the West.
Yeah,
honestly, like if you really did stick to it till the end of the game, that's probably why.
But you're never going to get, and please don't try and do this, you're not going to get a two-way.
No,
there's no way to do a two-way draw.
It might be the most laughable two-way attempt on the entire
game. Yeah, it's going to take an Austria that really, really wants it. because the opportunity for Austria to solo in the late game is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just all of Scandinavia, all of Russia, all of Germany, of that is just Austrian for the taking.
Mm-hmm.
And
Italy's only solo in that case is probably... but through an Austrian step.
Oh, yeah, that's the only way.
Yeah, you've killed Turkey, you've mostly...
I've soloed as Italy doing that, sure, but yes.
You've killed Russia, you've killed France, probably, you're hammering on Germany, and then you step.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want an Italian solo in this alliance, I don't think there's a way that you
there's
get
not
that
a, there's
while
really not
never
a good
stabbing your Austrian.
Oh, God, no.
Austria could probably do it while never stabbing the
Italian, absolutely.
Although... those dots are awfully nearby, and so if you're looking for
probably
solo, might find a couple of Italian ones.
Which again reinforces that every Austrian should be welcoming an AI. Every Austrian, it works every time.
Never
if it's offered
that way,
to you,
yeah.
You always want it.
Yeah.
There's never a time in which you're like, nope, I don't want to work with you. I'd rather work with Turkey. There's no reason to.
Mm-hmm.
There's none. If you have an Italian that wants to do it, you like saddle up. Where we go? Yes, sir. Let's do it. Woo, woo, woo. Whereas if you're the Italian, you've got a lot more choices. It might be your best bet. Although, you know, a lot of times, as we talked about in the Italy episode and other episodes involving Italy, you know, you're often better off just plowing into Austria and getting those early gains.
We're not talking about that this episode.
I know. Totally, but I'm just saying when you're balancing it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's board to board. Like, there's tons of times when it doesn't make any sense to do that.
It is.
But what I wanted to make sure we talked about is Austria should always want this. I don't know a scenario in which Austria should say no to an AI, unless your eye is, you know, a wackadoo.
Right. Your eye is going to win the tournament unless you eliminate them.
Yeah, there's, I mean, like, there's, like, there's such a, I mean, like, there's, like, yeah, crazy things, but yeah, typically, mm-hmm, you definitely want to
do it. And even then, you probably do it for, like, a year. like, hey, I know that you know that I'm going to win this tournament if I survive, and so I think, no, it's fine. It's your, I want you to win this tournament. Yep. Like, let's at least till 1902. I'm not stabbing you. Like, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so there's one last thing we need to talk about, right? There's, like, the thing.
Oh, yeah, and then I guess I just had the how to deal with AI if you're the rest of the
board. Oh, yeah.
It's almost too much, and we're short of time, but, this one doesn't seem to require a ton of deep insight, just because
we kind of already mentioned it.
Yeah, you can certainly appeal to their baser instincts if you're really trying to split one up. Like you can certainly
focus on Italy.
Well, either way, depending on how long they've been allied,
I guess
the stab could be open. Right, like pre-Spring 01.
If it's early in the game, you want to target Italy, because Austria, I just said, mm-hmm, is going to want to stick at this, mm-hmm, at least through 02, because it's great for them. It's there's pressure off, and it's great.
Yeah, but you can certainly always try and break them up just by, like, pointing out, you know what you could do right now, like walk to Venice, walk to Rome, walk to Naples, like in over the next year or so, and then that's pretty much that. How about doing that instead?
Obviously,
tactics wise, they're not so bad if they're isolated, if they don't have a third buddy somewhere on the board.
Yeah, this is like we talked about, they're easily locked. But you, as Russia or Turkey, the first thing you need to do is go to whoever the other one is and say, we have an AI, I know we're not getting along. We need to, at least until we can break this up, mm-hmm, we need to lock them down. And that's why that sort of deadlock happens. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have a choice. You have to do it.
Right.
And then use that as a hammer, saying, we're just sitting here doing nothing. We're just sitting here doing nothing. Break, 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 break. Exactly. Or say, I'll break. I have no problem breaking. I don't even like the guy. But as long as you guys are doing this, as long as you two are lockstep, we're an RT, and we're blocking you, and et cetera, et cetera. You need to go to your counterpart and sell that, and do that immediately.
Yep.
That's that.
The other thing is literally, like, one French fleet in the West Med
breaks it, yeah.
Kind of just, like, undoes the entire thing.
Yeah.
So if you can manage, like, that one diplomatic goal of just, oh, he's in the West Med, and I can't defend Tunis. Oh,
and you're done.
That's pretty much it.
It doesn't even take that much. And France can have no interest whatsoever in Tunis. But if you, mm-hmm, can get him to drop down, maybe you can find a way to say, like, look, you don't need that fleet there. You're working with England. It would really help me if you just set it there for just one turn, and then sell them on, like, this is an AI, you're next. The natural thing to do after we're done is to go for you. So if you don't do anything, just sail there.
Yeah.
And that will disrupt the entire thing. And Germany, the same way. If Germany somehow, they probably don't, has an extra army.
Yeah.
Maybe they're doing something. Maybe they're doing something against France. There could be a scenario in which they want to go through Piedmont. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you can get Germany to drop something to...
That one's a little different, though, because, like, the fleet in the West Med is almost always hostile. The army in Tyrolia, I feel like it's always like, oh, we're Central Powers, we're buddies, I thought you might need this, and then everyone kind of just gets sick to their stomach, like all three Central Powers are like, what's happening now?
What's happening?
Why is that? Oh, somebody took somebody else's dog. Yeah. That is a good, like, if it's clear that just, like, hello, I'm Germany, I'm here to impose order on this dangerous AI, and just that one army in Tyrolia, like, that can really take a lot of the wind out of an AI's sails, too. Yeah.
It's just, just to give you something, these are just ideas, so, like, mm-hmm, how to react to it. England can't really do anything.
No, unless he's just replaced France, and then it's just an
can't
English
do,
fleet in the West.
Can't do anything to react to it. Basically... The only way to deal with it mid-game is to talk to the Italian about how the Austrian is going to solo. That's your wedge.
Right.
Like, there's no way. Count the dots, Italy. Count the dots. Where are you getting him? Where are you getting, mm-hmm, him? Mm-hmm. Look how many he's got. Look at his trajectory. Where are you getting him? And that's basically your line.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I mean, I guess
the thing is,
Germany is somehow, like, benefiting from an AI. England can be fighting Germany, but anyway.
But the last thing on this is basically, while I've seen AIs get pretty far, they typically fall apart.
Yeah, they do.
Which is why I don't really know how to like talk about a mid-game breaking up with that alliance. It's like it's pretty rare that it's just an AI and not like an AIR or a turkey.
And they can fall apart not even just because they like stabbed each other. They can fall apart just because they suck.
Kind yeah. of. Like, yeah, it's true. Like, because of that interconnectedness.
They are actually a couple of the worst powers on the board. Yeah. And if they decide we're on board, we're in bed together, they end up in some kind of 2-on-2, they can just lose.
Yeah.
And
pretty fast.
Like, they can go down arm in arm, like on the Titanic or something. Like, I love you too, and we're both dead. Yeah. Like, that actually can happen to an AI.
And it's not hard.
Like, it happens to my AI.
Yeah. Anyway. Awkward.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
So, we're going to move to our special guest.
Special guest. Champion, the winner, the number one, if he's still actually at home, because we've gone so long on this already.
Oh, he's fine. He's the winner. If we don't get him now, he's coming up next.
After this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
boys and girls,
we have the winner of Fantasy Diplomacy 2014,
the inaugural year.
Now that it is New Year's 2015, we can celebrate one of the really good guys of diplomacy, joining us from somewhere in Maryland, I'm going to say, it is Mr. Ike Porter.
Mr. Ike Porter, yay, winner. Are you actually in Maryland?
I am in Maryland, just outside of Baltimore, actually. Yes.
Excellent. Nice get there.
Thanks. Yeah. 1 in 50. Yeah. Really not bad.
It's not bad odds. Yeah. I'm all in.
Yeah, I call.
So tell us, Eric, how you came to the determination. I mean, I think we gave this away last episode when we gave an update. Like, Ike was like he was just far and away the winningest guy.
Yeah.
And we did. I think nothing's really happened.
Nothing really changed. There was carnage to go, and carnage did not change enough. And he had a giant frickin' lead going into the last round with his team, which I feel like I should have in front of me here, unless Ike happens to know it. Hold on.
It was Chris Martin was my first pick.
Yeah.
My second pick was Jan Kluwe, and my third pick was Brian Ecton.
Yep, there you go. Between, I don't know what Jan did other than...
Well, Chris just went and had himself a damn career year.
Ecton did really well at World.
Yeah, and honestly, that's what I was counting on. You know, I knew Chris was going to do well. He always does. You know, as well as he does, he still does, and I respect him for that. I love him. Ecton always tears up North Carolina, and I figured I'd have some points from him at Tempest as well. Jan was my wild card. I figured he would play a little more than he did. I'm disappointed with his performance, quite frankly, and we will be having a stern discussion. but all those guys, it was a great concept. It was a lot of fun. I was surprised that, you know, some places the meta came out, some places not so much. I want to apologize to Brian Sheldon. I was one of his picks, and I could have told him I wasn't going to play as much as I wanted to this year, but, you know, God bless him. He gave me a shot, and I appreciate that. It's nice to be picked. It really was.
That's all right. Some sucker picked me in the first round. I don't think I scored anybody a point.
I was on somebody's team. Sorry. Yeah. I apologize. You shouldn't. I think I was one of the last people picked. I think it was people out of desperation. I know who that guy is. I'll just put it there.
Right.
Yeah.
Ike, I don't know. You went to a couple of tournaments. Did you have any discussions about your team, or did you talk to anybody on your team? Like, oh, good luck on the tournament. Like, did Fantasy Diplomacy at all occur to you other than maybe right now?
Yes, especially at Dixie, I was actively encouraging Brian and Chris. I was counseling them on their play. I didn't go so far as to write any orders for them, of course, but you know, make sure they had plenty of, you know, breakfast right on time, you know, well hydrated. I take care of my horses, so.
So to be clear, did you actually have discussions with them, or did you at least observe their games? Were you interested in their games because
he's
of
saying
their...
yes, man.
No,
I don't think he actually made sure they had breakfast. I think he might be being facetious about that.
I did take an active interest in how they were doing. I was, you know, verbally encouraging, you know, but at the same time, you know, I don't think that anything I said or did really influenced anything. It was more that after the game, telling Chris he did well, telling Brian, you know, talking strategy, it gave me an excuse to talk about things I wouldn't necessarily have been able to.
It gives you something to root for, just kind of like fantasy sports do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was a fun experience.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Should we do it in 2015? Absolutely. And if so, would you do anything differently?
No, I mean, I think I had, I think I could give Jan one more ride and,
he comes back. Head into the glue factory.
Yeah. Yeah. League, you know, it's Chris Martin, it's Brian Acton, 1 and 2, absolutely.
No, would you do anything if you were us, structure wise? Would you do it differently? Would you go 4 rounds? Would you go 2 rounds? Would you go? I mean,
I think well by linking it with kind of a neutralist scoring system that would be taking place anyway. I really don't think that this meta affected anything going on in any of the other tournaments. Everybody played to their own best interest. It was amusing, it was a chance for some amusing conversation. It really was.
Can you confirm or deny the existence of fantasy diplomacy?
I believe the second rule of fantasy diplomacy is do not discuss fantasy diplomacy.
And point Ike.
Moving on then.
Clearly won that question.
Yeah.
That's amazing. No, really, we're really pleased, and it's I'm curious to see. I think the plan is, and I think we can announce it, Eric.
Yeah.
To what when the next seed will be.
Yeah, we hopefully this show gets out the door before the actual event. Oh yeah, well it totally will. There is an event, and I get that it's an invitational, and that makes me like a total elitist. But it also has the advantage of it happens to be in January and at the beginning of the year, and there's going to be a bunch of people there. So. We're going to do our next draft at the... I don't even know if the event has a name. The Chris Martin event.
The Chris Martin special.
Yeah. Chris hosts a bi-yearly invitational event with a floating location. This year I am apparently going to some part of Alabama for an event, which is, I don't know. My people aren't usually we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Other than the tar, the Gulf of Mexico is beautiful to hang out in.
Other than the tar. I think you're right. So here's a question for everybody, for the group. Let's say... because it's an invitational, you're interested in participating in fantasy diplomacy, but you can't come to this event. Uh-oh. Does that mean you're SOL?
Probably.
Okay. So that's a very definitive.
We could do some like panicked, like we'll do it by text kind of a thing, but that sounds painful. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here for our brainstorming session.
No. I was just curious. I wanted Ike's opinion. Like maybe he's like, should it just be whoever's there?
As much as it might suck, hey, there's always next year. You know, if this is, it's got to be a face to face drawing. It really does.
That's true. Not to do anything else.
It is. The only, thing I might compliment is. Have the year rotate where, this year comes January because of the invitation in January, but mm-hmm. the year following, start the year in February, whatever the February event is, and then if there's a March event, and just kind of shift the year forward.
Oh, that's true. Just have it be an 11-month
right.
event.
Well, the other thing you
like
could,
every time, yeah.
The other thing you could do is we could do it just at Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we do that this year, but I'm saying in the future you could just decide, this is popular enough. I think it has to be a certain level of popularity.
All right, well, it'll be another, we're trying it again this year. Yeah. The prize will be the same. You get to come on our podcast and gloat. So if you have any other gloating that you have
to do. Yeah, you need to, if there's anything you want to say to your other coaches, your other fantasy players. You get it.
I mean, this is glorious. I really don't feel the need to address the other players. I mean, they know their shame and disgrace. They know that, you know, forever forward, that I will be the first to have won this prestigious event with the rights pertaining thereto for. And, you know, I look forward to the bowing and scraping for the next 5 years. I really do.
It is going to be tough to have that place of honor every time you go to an event. Everyone's like, oh, look, it's the king. Here he is. It's the guy that was able to pick really good players for a really good team. I mean, he really rallied. He really, really showed us how to do it.
It was a stretch. It really was. But, you know, somehow justice prevailed and we were able to, you know, overcome all the odds.
Was it, I mean, basically, was it that you had an early draw?
Well, you picked, was it second or third?
I picked second.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because Eddie went first, and that was actually also a perfectly reasonable choice made by somebody. I forget who now. But, yeah.
It may have been Chris Martin that took Eddie, actually.
No, it wasn't. It was somebody. I had this at one point, but yeah.
But no, I mean, let's face it. There are some very easy first picks. You know, there are some names that might come up. Like, you know, back in the day, I might have been a first round pick if I actually played the game more frequently.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of guys in the crowd that we love the game. We don't play as much as we'd like to or we used to. You know, we're still just as good. We just don't get in there.
Yeah, and, you know, some people aren't as, you know, good as they used to be. Oh, like Eric. Yeah, Eric used to be good.
That's right. Nate Cockrell had the first pick. I remember
that. Nate Cockrell, and then he took Persan. Yeah, yep. That's right. It's good to hear from you, man. I'm glad that you had the time to come on and gloat.
Oh,
it's nice.
Absolutely, and I'm honored to be on, guys. I really am. And, you know, you should really be thankful for the fact that I could spare the time in my busy schedule. I mean, since this has been announced, it's been a nonstop whirlwind of
as a
matter of fact, said that he's got something on the way even now for me. So
nice.
I think that probably this is the only podcast where people would get that reference, by the way. So let's just move along quick.
There's a lot of podcasts, but
So anything else that you want to chat about, Ike? Is there, I mean, other than I'll let you know that what we talked about on this episode was the AI. So mostly how it works and when to do it, when not to do it, how to break it.
Yeah, there we go. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you like Austria?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Austria is my favorite country to play. In my mind, you're either in the end game or you're out quick. There really is no middle ground with Austria. Mm-hmm. I've managed to play both ways where I pissed off everybody and pissed off nobody.
Mm-hmm. So do you like the AI?
I think it's necessary to at least have neutrality between A and I. If they fight, they're dead. My favorite is to actually convince Italy to head towards France. I want to talk to Russia to come down to beat on Turkey. And then I probably want to talk to Germany into helping me to quash Italy after he's gotten inroads into France.
That's a little more Western oriented for an AI kind of. Well, I guess we talked about that at the beginning, and then just kind of said, well, that's kind of A and I,
right?
Rather than AI, like rather than an active. Like if Italy goes west and has non-aggression with Austria, that can work for both of them.
My problem with the bound AI is that you really need Russia to beat up Turkey. You know, having Italy along is great, but it's very difficult to stab Italy unless you can get them to overcommit, and that's really kind of a newer player thing. You know, more experienced players don't tend to overcommit. That's why I'd rather just have them out of the way and work with Russia on Turkey.
There's not really such thing as an Austria-Turkey-Italy alliance.
No,
it's
like that.
Unless somebody's just doing nothing.
Right.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, that doesn't work at all.
Yeah,
although, having said that, now I want to try to figure out a way to make that work.
Exactly. Just do that to a three-way draw.
Yeah.
Three of us. We agreeing to that right now?
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay.
And actually, you know, that's something that a lot of guys don't realize, and I'm gonna let this secret out now. I actually learned diplomacy on the West Coast. So as much as I'm an East Coast player, I actually learned on the West Coast.
With this quarter.
What's that?
I don't like where you're going with this quarter.
Well, no, I'm just saying that out of the East Coast players, I am probably more likely to try for a long-term alliance than a lot of other guys that I necessarily play with.
Yeah, that's a very politically correct way of saying that.
Yes. Very politically correct way of saying that all us West Coast people just pick the three that are going to win the game at the beginning.
I think
it
just means we kind of like, if we get in something, we don't like to offend anybody. We're very
The West Coast game is just a little more tactical. It's a little more looking at the pieces moving. It's not as much about the personalities. It's more about a straight ahead strategy game from the West Coast. For the East Coast, it's a lot more chutzpah. It's a lot more personality. It's more reading the people than, people on the East Coast get more pissed off about somebody misreading the board. Whereas West Coast, that doesn't necessarily happen because you guys have that board sense.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's a nice way of putting it. I think Eric is processing it. I think he might have a retort. I mean, he's someone that's played a lot on both coasts.
I did.
I played my fair share.
I started here, then I went there for a while, and now I'm back here. And yeah, all right. You're the guest of honor. You won Fantasy Diplomacy. We'll just go with you.
Yeah, I think he's right. I mean,
I think that's a funny, like. That probably does make sense in terms of, like, if you live on the East Coast and you come and play here, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like, and then you go home. The funny retort would be to just be like, oh, that's because you guys are all just old and cranky and have played each other for like 50 years.
There's a lot of truth to that. I mean, I think there's been a lot more expansion in the hobby on the West Coast than the East Coast. We've certainly tried, but I think you guys have been a lot more. Players in the door than we've been able to generate.
Yeah, there's also been a lot of turnover. I mean, if you want to talk about player generation, it's all Kelly, it's all Chicago. Like, they're the ones killing it. They're just amazing. I mean, they're just, it's nuts. The number of games. Have you tracked at all the number of games they're doing? It's amazing.
And we don't have any, like, stereotypes about the way they play. It's like they're taking over and we don't even know how to, like, judge them.
Oh, yeah,
like,
we do.
Smarmily. Like,
yeah,
like,
we do.
Yeah.
They're just they're a little drinky. Is what they are.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'll drink it.
West Coast, the East Coast.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah. No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of that thing.
Are you in any way involved in Tempest or PTKS or any of that these days?
I'm on the list. I get to the games when I can.
You play?
I do play. I get to Tempest
how is
when
it?
I can. I'll tell you, I like how the club has refocused on the local hobby of trying to get those guys in. They've taken a lot more to more modern methods, like meet up with different methods like that. So that, you know, whereas before,
the newfangled stuff for those old guys.
Yeah, we still have the list. We still have the availability chart that we send out, you know, the stupid text file, but
yeah.
It still works. But they do all the new with the tubes and the whizzes and the whatever they do on the internets or whatever.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, PTKS, Potomac Tea and Knife Society, one of the older hobby groups.
I think right now they're the oldest active hobby in the United States.
Probably so. And they host
Easily.
The tournament Tempest there every, what, November, October?
It's October. It's
Columbus Day.
Columbus Day, right?
Weekend. The reason we did that, I wanted to make sure we stayed focused on the local hobby. So since a lot of people work in and around government around here, they get Columbus Day weekend off.
Makes sense.
So you can get Saturday and Sunday play and still have money to recover. So that was the sense with Columbus Day weekend.
Got it. So if you live in the greater Baltimore, D.C., et cetera, area, and you want to get some games, IKEA tells us that there's some – they're going off on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah,
it
pretty much monthly, every other month. They get some frequency. It's really well.
Yeah, plus the tournament, which is
– every October,
Which got huge for a while, then everybody got burned out, and it sort of was, like, dormant for some years, and now it's coming back.
Yeah. That's where it's at right now. I went to a number of times. It's a great tournament.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when I first came into the hobby, talking to the quote-unquote older guys at that time, you know, it's the same cycles. Clubs get hot, they get big, they burn out, they keep going. You know, in some form
they
or
work
another.
Really, really hard. They host Worlds or DipCon, and their heads explode, and then you have to pick up the pieces for a couple of years after that, right?
Yeah. That's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I feel good.
I am
so glad that we had the opportunity to talk with you, Ike, and crown you the winner, which I think all of us knew from the beginning
was going to happen.
I think it's just the winner.
It's the winner.
And, you know, I couldn't have done it without you guys and without my horses and without, you know, all the guys who gave it up to them. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for rolling over. Excellent. That really helped
you
my
sad,
bottom line.
Sad sacks. Thank you. All of you.
And then just so you know, I'm now going to forever refer to Fantasy Diplomacy players, teams, as horses. Like, that's the best idea.
Because you've never played an actual fantasy sport in your life, and you don't realize that they already do that.
I have no idea.
Yeah. It's actually, that's my original thing, Nathan, but you feel free to use it.
Yeah. That's your original, that's good. I'm taking this from you, your original idea that's never been talked about before. Congratulations. Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much. And Nathan, thank you especially for putting together the last whack. I couldn't tell you how awesome it was to see you
guys.
That's
because you were drunk for the whole time.
Well, you're right. But besides that, I'm certain I had a good time.
So were we. So that's okay.
Well, I'm really glad you had a good time. It was fantastic to see you. And we'll talk to you very soon.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Ike. You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead, signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.